and welcome to The Midday.
It's The Midday with Norman and Vicki, and today with John Harbison also. Thanks you for coming into the studio for a little bit during the Token Creek Chamber Music Festival.
Well, my pleasure to be here.
We have a recent stack of CDs from Token Creek, a lovely assembly of seasons past, a compilation of some of the concert performances that you've given, and we'll be listening to several of these throughout this half hour. And I guess maybe we'll start right away with some music. Why not?
What would you like to hear?
This is from, let's see, I don't know which year exactly, but it was when Judith Gordon and Christopher Taylor were playing a Bach concerto.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll hear the last movement.
Well, you can see how, from that and from some of the other Token Creek performances that I've attended, how jazz musicians would take to Bach so well, because sometimes it just cooks, doesn't it?
We have some jazz musicians who play in both our jazz concerts and the concerts. We don't have as many audience members as we thought we did. Sarah Schaefer actually had the idea of a demographic survey to really determine how many of our audience members come to both the jazz and the concert music. And we were a bit surprised that there were few. And in fact, we now have a new policy invented by John Schaefer, bass player with the jazz, which we give preferred seating at the jazz concerts to the people who go to both.
Good luck with that policy.
Well, we think it's at least an innovation of some sort. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a rare thing.
Well, I think that the jazz concerts that I've been to are always sold out, and they're very popular. It seems that it's just a different audience, you're saying.
Yes, and of course, mm-hmm. our dream, since some of us do both, was that we could refer between them, and the mm-hmm. programming would be integrated across the concerts, which, of course, we've always done. But that's been falling on, if not deaf ears, non-ears. And we continued it this year, actually. We have a through-going theme of variation pieces on every concert, quite substantial ones. And we have been continuing to make these references between jazz and concert music. But we'll see whether the new policy is attractive enough to create a kind of a cross-current between. Because, of course, what Norman said, it is true that those of us who play in both of those media are very aware of the common ground. And Bach Musical Offering, which we have going on tonight and tomorrow, has so much in it that is the working upon a pattern, of and very improvisatory kind. Some of it, at least, extremely invented on the spot. In fact, the entire event that gave birth to that piece was an occasion in which Bach was asked to improvise. And that idea of concert music, musicians improvising, is somewhat less prevalent now.
Yeah, I think it's time for it to come back more. Yeah. Let's see what they can do with a blank page.
Or a nugget of an idea. Yeah. So the programs are organized with very interesting themes. You began with the songs, Sacred and Profane, and tonight, Musical Offering. There's a Haydn extravaganza also with four different pianists rotating through the four trios.
Yeah, that's obviously a rather extravagant thing to do. I guess the extravaganza is the notion of four people, each one to play a piece of 20 to 25 minutes, which is a little exorbitant. But what we wanted to do was emphasize the distinct character of these pieces. These pieces, the Haydn trios, are so varied. They're p- pieces written with sort of no holds barred attitude. He was working late in his career in a medium that was really his own to shape. It was not particularly visited by other composers up to that point. And he was just having a really good time finding extremely distinctive approaches to these pieces. So we thought with four pianists we could emphasize that, and we tried to assign the pieces accordingly, just to get the temperament with the piece that we wanted. And we've been performing Haydn trios a lot, right on through the whole history of the festival. We've done a great many of them. And one of the things we found about them is that they are all so different from each other. I think this will be a very varied evening. It won't feel as much like a one composer evening as like a trip through a very unpredictable mind. And I think it will be fun to hear what the color that the four different pianists bring. We're emphasizing the format by having the same string players play all the way through.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard of it being done that way.
So the variable is only is only in one area. Mm-hmm. This is, again, it's a kind of an interesting experiment, but it grows out of our long interest in these pieces, in the Haydn trios, and our feeling that they were pieces that audiences, particularly in a small room, enjoy hearing. They're designed for small spaces. They're not pieces for giant halls. That's not their nature.
Overlook that sometimes, don't we, with a lot of music that it really was not written for a giant concert hall. It was written for these more intimate venues.
Yes, and Haydn wrote these pieces actually for small group of associates, players, and people that he knew, sometimes patrons of his in London. He was writing them for, in the case we're doing one piece, the D major, which he wrote for his copyist, a attractive young woman that he apparently found very delightful.
Hope she enjoyed copying that one.
And it has, a very tender, very heartfelt character. They were in the best sense sort of occasional pieces that were meant for a particular group. And one of the things, of course, that evolves from that is that they don't have too many specific directions about how to play them. They're lacking in the kind of markings that composers generally introduced in pieces that they expected to send out and travel around the world, and as some of his pieces did. So we have to supply or invent a certain amount, as we might have too with earlier music, as to whether it should be loud or soft or whether we should be accenting or not, because they were probably described by him to the players who were handy, and they didn't need all this information.
Fascinating.
Well, we have some Haydn from a past season here. I believe we're going to hear a slow movement of one of the trios. Which one is this? The D major trio? I don't know if there's anything you'd like to add about that, John.
Well, this is the D major, the 23. They're all later pieces, virtually all from the last years of Haydn's life. This is Robert Levin, Rhonda Ryder, Rosemary Harbison. Robert Levin does in this piece, in a few open spaces, improvise quite a bit, as he does with music of this period. So all the way through the performance of this piece, Levin is playing rather freely invented moments, interspersed with, of course, what Haydn actually wrote.
So that was a concert recording from 2001, the second movement of the Haydn Piano Trio in D major, number 23.
Mm-hmm. And we heard Robert Levin improvising a rather extended cadenza at the end of that movement, which is the kind of thing that happens in these pieces, rather surprising that he includes such openings for the performer if they can take them. But not every one of us wants to do it quite that.
How many years for Token Creek now?
Well, it's a disputable question because we had sort of two startup times and then a hiatus. But the original event was virtually 20 years ago, but then it wasn't a continuous. So we can't really celebrate anniversaries because we can't agree what they would be.
We have that same problem, you know, with Wisconsin Public Radio. In 1917, yeah, but, you know, 1921, we sympathize.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But a long time, anyway.
Right.
And you are in the midst of many, many different projects, composing a symphony with soprano and baritone voice for Boston Symphony.
Yes, that's the ongoing project.
Sounds.
Yeah, and I have quite a bit done on that piece, which I can't say of most of the other projects I'm supposed to be working on.
Yeah, how do you decide what you feel like writing in a day? There must be many calls for your time.
Well, I work on a number of things at the same time. Usually, that's generally the way I try to work. I haven't been able to do that for a while, but in the case of that piece, I do have material for the singers ready for them to study, which is where I want it to be at this point, because that will take some time for them to learn their parts.
What text are you using?
I'm using essentially in the largest part of the piece a poem by Czesław Miłosz, Polish poet, a large narrative text, but then I found that it needed other texts because of the nature of the way it concludes, or just the tone of it. So the piece got a little bit more extended than I thought it would be. But that's something that sometimes does happen, that what I predict I'm going to do is not always what I want to wind up doing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, that's the discovery part of the creative process.
Yeah. And there's so many different varied kinds of pieces you're working on, percussion sextet, a chamber music piece, a chamber work for, let's see, soprano, flute, clarinet, violin, cello. It's a big, big ensemble there, piano and percussion, for the New York Music Ensemble.
Mm-hmm. It's a little bit fictional at the moment. The percussion ensemble, I have about a minute and a half of that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. A good start.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah.
Well, and there's always... there's always the jazz, which, as I mentioned before, seems to be a popular thing at the Token Creek. And maybe you'd like to talk about the barn a little bit and what a wonderful setting that is for chamber music.
Yeah, we like the size of the barn. Something like a Haydn trio in the barn is really the room size that the pieces were made for. And there is a lot of chamber music, it turns out, that benefits from being in that size. It's even more or less the size of a jazz club, and we sort of turn it into a jazz club for those events. It's quite a stage-setting transformation problem moving between the concerts, because we actually have tables for the jazz people and so forth. But we've done it now for a few years, and it seems to happen. I'm a little worried about tomorrow, where we perform the musical offering in the evening and rehearse the jazz in the afternoon. That could be a real brain shift and logistic shift issue that will be quite interesting.
Well, maybe tomorrow night's musical offering will be jazz-inspired.
It could be very influenced by this. Yeah.
That's worth the price of admission right there. See what you get.
Well, we're going to shift to some 20th century music here now before our quiz question. I think we have time for... some of this early Copland.
This is an unusual piece written by Copland before he went to study in Paris, and we got permission to do it from the Copland Fund. I'm the president of the Copland Fund, so I actually asked myself.
What a fortunate convention.
If we could perform this piece. And so it is interesting to hear Copland before he became Copland.
And this is Copland at the age of 21 in 1921 with a prelude, and this is Rosemary Harbison violin and John Harbison piano. Well, an interesting blend, as you say, John, of French in the style of Fauré or Franck and early, i.e. 21-year-old Aaron Copland. A prelude, the second of three on a Token Creek performance CD.
And that was Rosemary Harbison violin, John Harbison piano, and both performing again this year at the 2007 Token Creek Chamber Music Festival, and it continues. There are concerts tonight and every night this week, including Sunday afternoon. And if you'd like some more details, there's a website, tokencreekfestival.org, and there's also a telephone number, 608 area code 241-2525. And concerts take place, well, in Token Creek. That's near DeForest, I guess, mailing address. So
well, thanks
for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for being by today.
Very welcome. Pleasure.